Could you turn, please, to 1 Corinthians chapter 12? This is the last of seven studies over a very... Well, I've deliberately planned this so that it isn't a heavy study, and I trust that there may be a number of practical points that we can think about as we move through. Actually, there are three parts to the study: the distribution, recognition, and development of the gifts. Concerning the distribution of the gifts, I'm sure we have had enough said to us over this weekend to realise that there is no set formula that we can follow. You don't get an exhaustive catalogue in the New Testament of all the gifts. Now, this has been said in various contexts by various people, and sometimes you get the impression that the writers have almost a random selection just to illustrate their point or to speak about the particular gifts that they feel are worth speaking about to the people to whom they're writing. And there are many gifts that people have that are not mentioned here, and there are some gifts mentioned here that you are rather surprised to find mentioned there. The important thing is, in verse 11, that God, at the end of the verse, God apportions to each one individually as he wills. God gives the gifts to different people according to his will, and at the end of verse 7, for the common good, for the building up of the church. Not every church is going to have all the gifts there, even the 20 or so gifts that are mentioned here in the Bible. You're not going to find all of those gifts. You're not necessarily going to find all of those gifts in every church. You may find them, of course, but then churches vary in size, and some, of course, are so small that you couldn't fit them all in anyway. But there are many gifts. The ones we have here are the ones that we are well aware of. And in each church, or within reach of each church, God has his distribution of these gifts so that people can carry on his work. And even if they aren't in those churches, he has given elders who can take steps to see if they can be acquired from elsewhere or borrowed so that they might be a further assistance in the growth of the church. Now, in relation to this, there's an important thing that very often is overlooked, and that is that we are usually not the only local church in the locality. It may be, in some cases, I gave an illustration yesterday in some parts of Thailand, for example, where a church in that locality happens to be the only church there, so there's no denominational hang-ups. All the Christians are in that one church. So in a very true sense, that is the local church. But for most of us, we belong to churches in districts, and there are other evangelical churches in the districts. And they, just as diligently as we, are studying about the gifts, and they too are seeking to run their church as if it is the local church, just as we're seeking to run ours as if it's the local church, and yet none of them truly can claim to be the local church. I'm sure that all of us would recognise that none of these churches has within it all the Christians in the area, and none of them has all the gifts in the area. We should just bear this in mind, I think, when we're thinking of the activities in our own locality and how we might go about fulfilling them. Denominationalism is one of the things we've been saddled with, whether we like it or not. And we're part of the scene, whether we like it or not. There's nothing terribly disadvantageous, you might say, about denominationalism, provided we are not sectarian. And that's the distinction I make. Denominationalism simply means different people have different names attached to them. Sectarianism is a great evil where people cut off other people and look upon themselves exclusively as God's people and would seek to assign all the others to some other group of people. And that is a great evil. And that is the sort of thing that I think we should discourage. We should realise that God's people, the church universal, is a very large body. And we sometimes impoverish ourselves by becoming very narrow-minded and thinking that somehow within the four walls of this gospel hall we have all the gifts that we need for the functioning in this locality. If we cast our eyes further afield around the district, we may come to some other conclusions and realise that God has gifts that are available to us. And then, of course, we have other churches within our denominational group in nearby localities, and so we may be able to draw on them. I'm sure that every one of us would acknowledge that we need help from other places. We acknowledge that simply by the fact of inviting speakers to take meetings in our churches. We acknowledge that we need help from other people outside this local fellowship of which we are members. Now, just where you draw them from and over how wide a circle, that's something to be decided locally. As long as we don't get the impression that the further away they come, the better they must be. You know, the old problem of a prophet not being recognised in his own town, but then the further away that town happens to be, well, the better the prophet must be. We have to just examine these things and realise that this distribution of the gifts is not something that's exclusively the property of the particular church that lives here in this district. Now, we have, as I mentioned previously, two large areas of concern. One is the settled ministry, that is the gifts which are more or less permanent, you might say, or of people who are settled in that locality. We talked about this in relation to the elders of the church at Ephesus, the pastor teachers who were there resident in Ephesus. A good example is our friend Epaphras at Colossae. He was a good evangelist because he founded the church. He was a great pastor. He was a great teacher. He built up the church and helped the Christians. So there you have a more settled ministry. Now, if that's the sort of situation God has placed each of us in, well, whatever gifts God has given us there, let us use them there for the development of that local church. Then, of course, you have the other gifts that tend to see people moving over a wider area, more itinerant, and I mentioned again, sometimes it could be a short term, such as Paul and Barnabas coming to Antioch for 12 months, and then later on we find Paul and someone else in Corinth for 18 months, some other place for 3 years, some other place for 2 months. Flexible in this area. We find references to itinerant teachers in the New Testament. In John's epistles, you'll find reference, in the third epistle in particular, where John writes to a man called Gaius and tells him how he should treat these itinerant teachers who came through and how he should help them on their way after they have ministered in the fellowship there and as they move on to other places. So there we have a fairly swift type of itinerant ministry, then we have a more settled itinerant ministry, and then we have a more permanent settlement in a locality. What I'm saying is, once again, there is no set formula, and so we have a whole range of possibilities here for the exercise of the gifts, and they're distributed in all these different ways, and so we're coming up with no pat answer as to how they are distributed or to how we might utilise them. That's why we need leadership, which is going to examine all these facets of the picture and then seek to use the gifts for the glory of God and the building up of the church. We come now to the recognition of the gifts. And I'm going to now be particularly concerned with our own local church. From here on in, I'm going to confine my comments more or less to the local church. And each of us, of course, is a member of some local church somewhere. Although I've talked about using gifts from other churches and the itinerant nature of certain gifts, we should never get ourselves into a mentality where we simply think of importing someone as an easy way out. Now, sometimes it may be a wise move to get help from somebody to come and move in for a greater or lesser period. But let us never opt for that as a slick solution to some problem in our church. What we should be doing, I think, is looking at our churches, looking at the members that are there, examining what we have and seeing what we can do with what we've got. And I'm sure there is a lot more there than we sometimes think. One of the big problems is that we have become so imprisoned in our own system. We've become rather used to certain patterns and forms in our church activities. We've become used to this idea of meetingism, that things can only be done in meetings and in formal activities. And the communication between the members of the churches has diminished, and we just don't have that free intercourse socially that would bring us to a better understanding of the needs and the potentialities that are there. And so what I'm going to plead for this afternoon is something that's very unspectacular. And that is simply that we set about making a serious effort to loosen ourselves up a bit in our fellowships and to concentrate not so much on formal activities and training programs, but on what can be done by individuals as people share what they have with others who can benefit from it. Now, this is a responsibility that's given to those who are already leaders or gifted people. Now, I know what happens. I was born and bred in the Brethren, and we are a very passive lot. We wait around and sit about and hope that somebody will one day do something, or maybe he might get led to stand up and pray in a meeting sometime, or maybe he might feel led to do such and such. And as a result, we have this very passive approach to things. And yet, that is not really where the Bible places the emphasis. The Bible places the emphasis on those who are already mature people, leaders, gifted people, on those people taking the initiative. And, of course, the verse that I'm going to use to justify that comment is the well-known one in 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. Needn't bother turning to it, we all know it off by heart, even if we don't always practice it. And that is that you are to take these, you're to look out, and you are to find certain men, he says, that you can entrust this teaching to, and you're to train them in such a way that they can go on and teach others also. So the ball is fair and square in the court of the mature people, the leaders. And I think we should be taking the initiative in finding out what the members of the church are thinking. We sometimes wonder why somebody doesn't do this, or why somebody doesn't take part in, say, the Lord's Supper service. And everybody's wondering why, and we never seem to go up and ask the person what the hang-up is. We wonder why it is that so-and-so's been for 6 months and all of a sudden he's gone silent. And we wonder if he may be offended, or we wonder if maybe there's a hang-up in his life. And we're all wondering about it, but we are so distant from each other. We seem to have lost this personal fellowship that nobody ever goes up and gets alongside the chap. Now, you can't go through a training school to learn how to do this. We've just simply got to learn this sort of thing in our own personal attitudes. And I'm sure that within our churches there's a lot of gift that's just lying there dormant. It's latent, and it needs someone to encourage it and to bring it to life. You may see somebody there in the church that obviously has an outgoing personality, a person that's keen for the Lord. And maybe there is a latent gift of personal evangelism, but the person's a bit hazy as to how to go about it. Possibly there's somebody that could be used in that church in a way that nobody else can be used. But are we alert enough to see the potentialities? And are we friendly enough with these people and loose enough in our attitudes to come alongside that person and see if we can maybe encourage some sort of development along that line? We've got some very creative people around, and sometimes they get a bit frustrated. One of the reasons that these para-church activities seem to flourish is because people get frustrated in our assemblies and then they go off and find fulfillment in some other para-church activity. Now, that's not a general broadside of para-church activities, but I'm just saying that sometimes it's our own fault because we haven't really taken the initiative in looking at the possibilities that are there and seeking to develop them. There are all sorts of things that can be done. Somebody might be studying in social work. Now, last night we had a very timely reminder of the social responsibility of Christians, particularly in ministering to the poor and the disadvantaged people in our society and in others. And so it's an area that's very often neglected. We have institutions, yes, I know, but I'm not talking about that. Now, here we have people that are interested in this. Have we ever done anything to give them some lead-in, some guidance? Have we ever thought as to how this gift that person has, that interest, there could be channeled, directed, improved, for the glory of God, for the edification of the saints, and for the blessing of those who need help? Well, I could go on and on. I'm not going to go through a whole catalogue of activities here. But just a couple of illustrations, I hope, that may get the point across. A word of warning. I've seen it happen, and in my own heart I know it is very easy for this to happen. You try to encourage somebody, and that person starts to blossom. And before you know where you are, the person is blossoming a bit more than you had hoped for. And then there's that old jealousy starts to stir in the heart, and maybe a person even feels threatened. Goodness me, this person's suddenly shooting towards the top. I better clip his wings, just keep him in his place, because I'm really the boy around here that pulls the strings. And so there it is. We need to be very humble in a genuine sense of the word, in praising God when we see somebody outstripping ourselves or doing something so much better than we may have been able to do it ourselves. And this old power-breaking business that goes on in our churches is a horrible thing, and it really does slow things up simply because there's an invisible power structure there and people are wanting to make sure that nobody else gets on the next rung above them. Let's just beware of that sort of thing. A few things here concerning our desire for these gifts, and it's very clearly presented for us here. We make a couple of references out of these passages in Corinthians having to do with the recognition of the gifts. Chapter 14, verse 1, we are told there, make love your aim and earnestly desire the spiritual gifts. You note that biblical expression there? Spiritual gifts. Now we are to earnest, thank you. You're just a little slow, but never mind. No, he's there. He was a little slow too, actually. But the point is that we are to earnestly desire these spiritual gifts. Have we ever stopped and thought about it? Now, most people seem to just go on week after week, month after month, without ever stopping to think about these things. And it's so refreshing when somebody comes up and speaks to you and the person has some sort of inclination or feeling towards something, and the person is desiring a spiritual gift. Now, we are told that we are to desire spiritual gifts, something for our private consideration. In verse 13 of the same chapter, we are told to pray. We can pray for these spiritual gifts. Here is a person who can speak in an unknown tongue, but he can't interpret. He doesn't have the gift. So he can pray for that gift to interpret. Now, I'm not going to suggest to you that that's a gift that I'm promoting this afternoon. I'm just saying the principle is there. You not only desire it, but you can also then pray for it. And not only for ourselves, but pray it and desire it for others. As you look around and we can see these people, we can desire a gift for them and we can pray on their behalf that God might gift them in some way. Especially the higher gifts, we are told in the last verse of chapter 12. Earnestly desire the higher gifts. So we have the whole range there from whatever may have been the lower gifts right through to the higher gifts. Now, of course, once we get this development taking place in our churches, we are going to need to change certain things. That sometimes is a problem because people are very resistant to change, as we all know. But if we're really genuine about it, some of the changes that might have to take place in our structures are really the least important of the things. The most important thing, of course, is the spiritual life and the spiritual development and growth of the individuals and of the church as a whole. For example, we have this matter of Bible teaching in the church, that is the systematic teaching of the Word. Now, I've heard some people say that when you have a structured teaching program, instead of any man stand up and speak when he likes, if you have a structured teaching program, that the gift is not going to develop and you're not going to see young men coming along. Well, that's simply not true. I'd say rather the opposite is true. And I've seen that when you do have a structured program, there is far more opportunity because then, once again, the elders taking the initiative, you see, you go along to these men, you choose out these men that you think can pass on the message, and so we make an effort to train them and to give them the opportunity to practice and develop their gift. There's a great interest in group things these days, group Bible studies, group activities of prayer and all sorts of other things, which again is a way whereby gift has emerged. I'm not going to lay down a program for revamping the whole of your church activities, but we must be prepared to change and be prepared to move with the development of the gifts in the lives of these people and in the church as a whole. Now, this again is going to take some discernment. So I'm going to repeat more or less what I said before, and that is that discernment is one of the great lacks that we have. And if we don't have that discernment, well then possibly we're going to be led astray. One of the problems is, of course, that the people in the power, in the church, are sometimes themselves lacking in this discernment. And as a result, they are very gullible, and quite easily they can be fooled by counterfeits. It's not only the people with evil intentions who can sometimes be operating in a church. Sometimes people with very good intentions could be trying to discharge a gift for which they are not equipped. We have a good illustration here in chapter 12 in the opening few verses there. I won't read them, except to mention that verse 1 again mentions spiritual gifts. But as it goes on there, It talks about a person who apparently is speaking in what I understand to be a spontaneous ecstatic utterance, and in the process calls Jesus cursed. The person is apparently within the church and in some way keen to express his worship or whatever it is for God, but you see he's completely off the track because he's been misled in various ways. We are told again in John, 1 John chapter 4, verse 1, that we are to test the spirits. We're told at the end of 1 Thessalonians that we are to test all teaching, and once again that is in the context there of teaching which is given in the church. So we are to apply these tests, we are to be discerning and to look at the possibilities and to see these people and what they're doing and how they're developing and how they're not developing, and not to be too easily fooled. It is, of course, dreadfully possible to be fooled. I was at a meeting recently, just a committee meeting, when somebody suggested that a number of young men in a certain place, maybe what we should give them is some instruction on how to preach. And I objected straight away because the young men in question hadn't even learned how to study the Bible. Some of them had a bit of a flair, they were little bits of performers, and they said you could change and develop this gift, you see. But let us not mistake that sort of thing for a teacher or a preacher. It's much more important that the person has something to say before we teach him how to say it. So here again we have to be careful that we're not too easily fooled simply because somebody shows a desire to be a speaker. There is a preliminary step, and that is to make sure that the person really has got to grips with the Word of God and that there is some development of discernment developing in his relationship to the Scriptures. And then when that starts to show itself, maybe we can move on to the next step of helping him how to say it, which leads me then to talk about the final point, and that is the development of the gifts. Well, the simple statement, I suppose, is that the best way to develop a gift is to use it. And that's what it says in Romans chapter 12, verse 6, having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. Now, once again, it's the responsibility of the leaders to teach, to train, and to guide young people in the use of their gifts, to give them the opportunity to use these things that are developing, to get alongside them and help them with some know-how on how they can use these gifts. For example, Paul, he took with him Mark. Now, whatever else Mark did, Paul obviously trained him, because when you get later on, you find that Mark himself has become quite an accomplished servant of God. Later on, he took Timothy with him. But by developing this relationship with Timothy, he was able to teach him and to train him, and before you know where you are, you find that Timothy too is a great servant of God. I think there's a great need for people who have already a developed gift, who already are mature Christians, who are people engaged in God's service, to take the initiative in looking out people within their church or other churches or other activities they're associated with and giving these people the opportunity to go with them and to show them a few things. I'm very grateful for a chap when I was in my late teens who first took me round a few gospel halls in Brisbane. And it was just a case of opening the service with a hymn and a prayer, maybe a Bible reading. But that was the start, and he took me around and gradually things improved. Now, unfortunately, he didn't give me any instruction, and so I had to learn the hard way, which is very unfortunate for me and sometimes for the audience. But at least he took the step. I think we could go a little further and maybe give some help to these people, showing them how they can more effectively communicate or do whatever they're required to do. But do we ever get around to doing it? Now, I was brought up again to be very sceptical of books. In fact, the mentality that had been instilled in me was that books were bad and they gave you wrong ideas. And of course, some books may be very good. And some sermons may be bad and give you wrong ideas, and some sermons may be good. But I think the reason behind this is that we are hesitant, such an array of books, we're baffled by it and we're confused and we don't quite know which ones to buy. Now, I've made it a policy with our students up in Brisbane, regularly, to take these people to a bookshop. I've done it with quite a number of individuals just to say, look, come with me, we'll go into a bookshop and we'll show you how things work. And introduce them to the types of books, the types of publishers, the types of writers, so that they can know their way around. Take them into my library. And you can spend hours breaking down some of these barriers and giving the people a little bit of know-how. The same with study. We hope that they'll learn how to study the Bible. Have we ever taken them home and showed them how to study the Bible? I've been tremendously thrilled, both in Bangkok and since I've been back in Brisbane, at the number of people who've responded to this sort of treatment. Just to sit down one person with one person and then to show them how to go about studying the scriptures and then to set a little assignment and say, we'll come back next week and we'll see how you went. We'll go through it together and then say, we'll come back next week and see how you went. And you'll find that some of them, of course, get the taste for it. Others, of course, find it's hard work and so they go back to doing other more leisurely things. But at least we must make the effort. That's what I'm getting at. We've got to make the effort, not in a highfalutin way, not in an autocratic way, but if we can develop these relationships, there's no doubt we can get across to them. And in due course, notice I said in due course, not immediately, but when they've shown some sort of appetite for the word and some sort of understanding of what's going on, then we can help them to prepare. Have we ever helped a young man to prepare a sermon, for example? It's not easy to prepare a sermon. And we say, well, I'll give you 15 minutes and see what you can do on Sunday night. Well, where does the poor man start? And so what happens is, you know, very often they look around for a few illustrations and pat it out and wonder when the 15 minutes is going to get up. We should be working the other way around and realise that the person has so much good stuff to say from the scriptures that he's going to wonder how he's going to fit it into his 15 minutes. And so we can sort out with him how he can prepare a talk, and then maybe we can help him to give it by maybe a little bit of practice. Now, when we've developed this relationship, there'll be no problems with criticism, because he'll be eager. And look, I've proved this time and time again. He'll be so eager that he'll come around the next night, or even the night after, over a cup of coffee back at home, and he'll want to know how he went. And so he can say, well, and then you can talk about it. That's far better than grabbing some other chap, grabbing him at the door. Now, this happened to me only 3 weeks ago in Brisbane. I took along a young chap to a certain gospel hall in Brisbane where I was speaking. And he was to give the reading and open the meeting for me, and I'd got the reading for him. I was going to speak on that passage. It was the very first time he'd ever put his foot on a platform, and he did exceptionally well. He prayed quite well. He smiled at the audience. He read the passage a little quickly, maybe, but he read it and read it very well. And as the thing went on, I took the service, and then as I was greeting the faithful as they departed at the door, I noticed that somebody had grabbed hold of this young chap, and he didn't understand that Bible you read. It was the RSV. Didn't understand that Bible you read. It was no good. Well, the chap thankfully smiled at him and didn't seem to get too upset. But I made it my business then to go and speak to this man. And so we had the usual non-profitable discussion on the yeah, all right. You've anticipated what was going to happen. He made the astounding comment that he didn't care if he had stumbled this chap on his very first time that he got on the platform. He said, I'd rather do that than see him read from this particular version that wasn't his favourite. I was very pleased also that an elder from that church had observed what had happening. He came up to me as I was getting in my car and said, look, I just found out about that. He said, I'll go around and speak to this gentleman during the week, which he did. But now what about the poor chap, you see? What about the poor young man? Well, I comforted him too, made sure that he went back again the next night and got back up on the platform and read from the same version and did the same things next Sunday. Otherwise he could be, as we heard in an illustration earlier today, that one thing could silence him for a long time. But when you get a problem, meet it. Well, he got through better than he did the week before and there were no obstacles at the door. Now, very simple illustration, but these are the very simple things that we should be doing, and I'm sure that if we get round to doing these sorts of things, we'll find that gift is starting to develop. We don't have to, as soon as we think of the possibilities of somebody doing something, we don't have to say, okay, we'll send them to Bible school or send them to a seminar. I've got nothing against seminars or Bible schools, but I'm saying that we aren't to pass the buck, that the first responsibility lies with us to do something with the people that we already know and we can help. I'm also involved in a new outreach in a new suburb of Brisbane. We've got half a dozen young people all around about the age of 20, and they've really got the bit between their teeth. And they're running quite a good children's work there. And simply by getting alongside these people, we've been able to find solutions to all sorts of little difficulties that have arisen. And so you'll find somebody that the young man gets up there to take the songs. And you know what happens? He doesn't know what to do with his hands. He can't conduct, so he puts them in his pocket and scratches his nose and walks around. And he's obviously embarrassed because he's leading the singing and doesn't know what to do with his hands. So just taught him a few elementary ways of beating the time. Next week, he was starting rather tentative, but it was better than nothing. And I said, I'll give it a good thump. And then no, I missed all this. And within a week or two, he'd found his feet and he was enjoying it no end. Now, once again, of course, I saw this happen once before in an assembly where they thought that two or three of the young men weren't all that clever at the way they led the singing. And so what they had to do then was to have a seminar for it and take up a whole Sunday afternoon. And really all the things that they said, they could have said in a couple of minutes just by getting alongside that person. But because nobody was close enough to anybody to just walk up and say, look, chap, you can do this and this and this, you had to make a meeting out of it. And then when you get a meeting out of it, you stand up here and show how it's done, and they all sit down there and they watch. I'm not against these seminars. The same with the Scripture Union seminar the weekend before last. Well, they all went along, all-day seminar at the Scripture Union. And they learnt quite a lot of things, which was very good. The interesting part was they came back and they said, so many of those things that we learnt there, we've already found out through what you've told us as we've been moving together. And once we establish these sorts of relationships, somebody stands up there and talks to the children, and at the end of every sentence says, okay. And then after this, we'll do the okay. And something, something, okay. And so just at the end, I said, you know how many times you said okay this morning? And I didn't say it at all. I said, you said it 12 times in about a minute and a half. And she smiled and she said, oh, I'll remember next week. And she did. They'll take it. If we've developed that relationship, we can move with them and we can pass on these little bits and pieces, and in 15 seconds you can get something across like that. You don't have to collar them at the door or preach a sermon at them or have a seminar. All we need to do is to be sufficiently free and easy with these people to be able to do it. And they won't take offence, they'll lap it up. Stand at the door like that other irascible brother and collar the chap, and of course you've done damage that could be irreparable. Well, I've got off my subject. But there are just a few illustrations. As you can see, this is near to my heart because this was the way we worked in Thailand. It's the way we tried to work at home. And I think if we can shake off a few of these shackles we've got because of our structures, well, then we'll get a lot further. And if you want to send them along to a better training program where they'll learn to take singing even better, or to go to Bible school or to some other thing, child evangelism fellowship or whatever, well, so much the better. I'm all for it. But it's the getting the thing mobile, getting the thing rolling in the beginning. This is what I'm talking about. Once we're doing this, we won't have the embarrassment when a person becomes a failure. And we won't even look upon it as a failure, because we'll be sufficiently close to the person to say, well, look, maybe that's not the area that God has for you. And I've had to do this a few times with some chaps, that you help them to prepare their sermons, and after about three sermons, it's obvious that the chap is not really going to come good. And it's just a case of saying, well, Bill, maybe that's not your line. And by this time they've normally found that out themselves anyway. But at least we've given them a go and we've established a relationship whereby we can talk with them. We're talking about the development of the gifts, yes. Now, I've only spoken about those two or three little areas that I'm particularly concerned with. But certainly it would apply right across the board to any other illustration that you can think of. Let us never forget that in anything there's going to be hard work. As we develop our gifts, we have to work at them. We must all aim for excellence in whatever the sphere happens to be. Now, this is what Paul said to Timothy. Don't neglect the gift you've got. He went on in the next verse to say, practice these things. Devote yourself to them so that your progress may be seen to all. Your progress may be seen. So that people can say, he's improving. He's getting better. We're seeing some development in this man. We've got to do that ourselves. We've got to be encouraging others to do it. And realise that because it happens to be a spiritual gift, That doesn't mean to say that it's going to develop automatically. We have to devote ourselves to it. We have to practice it. We have to be diligent in it. Because the Holy Spirit isn't given to us to relieve us of hard work. The Holy Spirit will make what we do more meaningful and will certainly give the spiritual thrust to what we're doing. But the Holy Spirit is not going to relieve us of our responsibilities. And our responsibilities are to find out those gifts, to practice them, to devote ourselves to them, and to progress in our development of those gifts that have been given to us. Shoddiness is no sign of spirituality. But there's an important thing that follows, and I can't neglect this, because in the next verse Paul says, take heed to yourself and to your teaching. Both things. Take heed to yourself and to your teaching. You can't separate the life of the person from the work which he is doing. We're not to encourage in others or to think ourselves that by aiming at technical excellence, we are thereby going to be pleasing to God in the discharge of our spiritual responsibilities. Certainly we should aim for the best. But that will never be effective if our lives are not totally yielded to God and walking in acknowledgement of the Lordship of Christ. Take heed to yourself as well as to the gift that you're seeking to discharge. And all these gifts must be discharged in submission to each other, in submission to Christ, and for the benefit of the body. Now we find that again here in 1 Corinthians 12. Verse 25, no discord in the body, but all the members having the same care one for another. This mutual dependence, submission to each other, and particularly submission to the leaders. Now, I'm not going to get off onto the subject of elders, but it's very clearly taught in the Bible that people within the church are to be submissive to the leaders of the church. If you want a reference, it's there, I think, in Hebrews 13:17. The reason I mention that is that we are never to fall back on this gift of the Spirit business as a justification for my doing whatever I think I want to do. God has given guidelines in the Bible, and we have a very good example in 1 Corinthians 14 of the misuse of tongues. People were claiming it was a spiritual gift, but they were misusing it. Even the gifts given by the Spirit and discharged in the power of the Spirit are to be discharged within the guidelines that God has laid down. And the guidelines are there, for example, in 1 Corinthians 14 concerning the operation of tongues, and everything is to be decent and in order, and to be in submission to those who have the responsibility for the life of the church. Above all, you find in chapter 12, verse 7, that they are to be exercised for the common good. Or in chapter 14, verse 5, they are to be for the edification of the church. Or in chapter 14, verse 26, that once again they are all to be done for edification. Which means that we will never use spiritual gifts as a means of achieving our own selfish ambitions. That is a total misuse of the gifts of the Spirit, and anybody who's seeking to develop his spiritual gifts with that sort of thing in goal or in view is of course misusing his gifts. And where selfish ambition exists, James tells us, there you will find disorder and every vile practice. Above all, when it comes to the development of our gifts, we must develop those gifts in the context of love. And in chapter 13, verse 1, we are told that if we speak in the tongue of men and of angels but haven't love, then we are just a noisy gong. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. And if there's not a corresponding development in love, then the exercise of our spiritual gifts in the end is going to lead to disaster for us and possibly for others as well. That's why it is that Paul says in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 1, that we are to make love our aim. Because love is the thing that is going to last on. The gifts are temporary, they are connected with this world. But love is something which is eternal and which lasts on into the age to come. So above all, we have to take heed to ourselves as well as to our ministry. We have to develop our gifts, but we also have to develop love. As Paul says again in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 1, make love your aim and earnestly desire the spiritual gifts.